Well, today we're in week 3 out of 4 of our message series called Bless This Home. And we are talking about how we can have homes or family lives that are even more blessed, that are healthier, that are better, even more blessed by God. Everybody in here, we've asked you every week, do you want a more blessed home? Everybody's like, yep, I want that. Everybody wants that. But the struggle is when we look at families today, I believe that there are so many families that are not quite as blessed as God would want them to be. And the truth is, the struggle is, everybody's searching for a more blessed home, but the struggle is, how in the world do we find it? How do we achieve that? And so a lot of people, you know, we kind of buy into the American dream of maybe we can have this blessed life if we just pursue the American dream more. If we just had more, whatever it is, more money, more stuff, more success, then maybe we'll have a blessed life. But we know that all that, you can take it to its end and it doesn't really satisfy. And so what we're doing is we're looking at the teachings of Jesus from Matthew chapter 5 when Jesus shared about the Beatitudes. Beatitudes is just kind of it's a Latin word that basically means blessedness. And so he gives us 8 characteristics here in Matthew chapter 5 of what it looks like to have a blessed life. A people who are blessed. How do we live so that we can be blessed? But here, Jesus was actually talking to a very broad audience, talking about anybody. If you want to have blessings in your life, you want to be blessed. But we're kind of narrowing the focus and we're centering this on our family lives. We're applying the teachings of Jesus and the Beatitudes to our homes and asking God to bless this home. And so today, I want to talk with you about, I think one of the things that's most difficult to find, but one of the most sought after things in our family lives, and that is to have a peace-filled home, to have peace in our homes. Everybody wants to have peace. Everybody wants peace in their homes. But instead, if we were to say, okay, what is our home characterized by? So many of us would say, well, I don't know if peace is the right word. Maybe it's more tension, maybe conflict, maybe strife. We have some disagreements. And there's kind of good news and bad news. Kind of a hard truth for you this morning, just getting started, is this. Everybody, if you're involved in any kind of relationship, if you have a family and you're engaged in them at all, everybody's going to have conflict. I don't know if that's good news for you or bad news. It might just be like, well, good, I'm not alone. Everybody, if you're bumping into messy human beings, you're a messy human being, and that's kind of what happens. You're going to have some conflict and some disagreements. And so what I'm not going to do today is I'm not going to give you 5 steps to avoid conflict in your life. I can't do that. In fact, Jesus never promised that to his disciples. He said, in this world, you will have trouble. Thanks, Jesus. But he said, take heart, I have overcome the world. He wants to be with you in the middle of your trouble, in the middle of conflict. And so what we're going to do today, I want to help you to go through conflict in healthy ways, in ways that look more and more and more like Jesus, so that God can bless our homes. And so some of you, when we're talking about conflict, when we're talking about the need for peace in our homes, some of you are like, yep, that's me. You're speaking to me. This is what I need to hear. That's my home. Maybe it's not all the time crazy, but we've got some conflict. We've got some tension in my family. But you need to know it's mostly not my fault. That's how we do oftentimes, right? It's like, well, yeah, I mean, we've got tension, but man, it's their fault. It's not me at all. And that may be very well true. It may be true. In all seriousness, because in every family, it's almost like a spiritual principle. In every family, instead of somebody being a peacemaker, there are people who serve as kind of the peace takers. You know, the people, it's like their job to suck the peace out of the family's life. And so maybe hard to deal with people. And this could be people not just in your immediate family. Maybe it's in your extended family. And sometimes we call those people psychos, but not to their face. And so anyway, just to kind of prove this point and everything, just so you feel better. How many of you, just raise your hand if you have, not a psycho, we won't say that. But in your family, somewhere in the family tree, if you have somebody who is a peace taker that you know about. All right, like 5 of us. All right, good. Yeah, most of us have that. If you weren't raising your hand, remember, in every family, there is somebody who is a peace taker. And if you weren't raising your hand and you can't think of somebody, you may be the one. Kind of sounds like Jeff Foxworthy, I know. You might be a redneck. You might be the one. But anyway, all of our relationships can be difficult and challenging, especially in our families. Because let's face it, families know us best. They know us the most. They're around us the most. And the truth is, they know what buttons to press. They know the things that can get under our skin. And when I do premarital counseling so many times, I say, you know, there's a reason that oftentimes spouses bump into each other and get on each other's nerves sometimes. It says in Genesis that when God made Adam and Eve, when God made Eve, basically, he said, Adam said, "This is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh." In other words, wow, when I look in the mirror at her, when I look in the mirror at him, I see a lot of me. And oftentimes conflict arises in our relationships with one another. Sometimes it's not anything to do with our spouse or anything or any of that. Sometimes our family, it's almost like looking at the mirror at ourselves. Sometimes they project things in us that maybe we're not sure about in ourselves. But anyway, they know how to get under our skin. In fact, if for those of you who knew me growing up, Todd Franklin, basically, we had so many moments of this. Me and my brother, Josh, we're competitive. We always, we were competitive in everything we did. We would play football and baseball and basketball, you name it. We played it out in the backyard, and I was the older brother. And so guess who won most of the time? Me. Now, that's not true anymore. He's bigger than me now, so he can beat me in like everything. But I had my glory days back when I was little, right? And the thing is as the older brother, I knew, you know, I knew how to get under his skin. I knew how to stick in the knife and twist it a little bit just so it causes a little bit of pain, you know, as I would beat him, you know. I would taunt him, and I knew how to get under his skin. And he would, you know, obviously get very, very angry because, you know, big brother was dishing it out to him. And that's how it is in family life. And so I don't know who that was for you when you thought about that peace taker, that person who's difficult in your family life. But maybe for you, maybe you're trying to raise your kids, and maybe your mom, or maybe there's some friend in your life that's trying to like give you this unsolicited advice of what you need to do and where you need to take your kids and all this stuff. And you're like, just bug off. Like, let me just raise my family the way I want to raise them. Maybe that's the point of conflict. Maybe for you, it's maybe it's your own kids. Maybe it's like, man, my kids are, they are wild and crazy, and they argue all the time. I don't know what to do. And so maybe you find yourself doing what you never thought you would do. You start saying things like your parents, like, if you don't stop, I'm going to pull this car right over. You know, it's like, where did that come from? That was, sounded like my parent, right? Or maybe you find yourself counting to three, and then nothing changes. And so you count to 10, and nothing changes. And so you just give up and go take a bath and just say, well, dear God, please help my family, you know? And maybe you're part of a blended family in some kind of way and trying to raise your kids and her kids and our kids. And then there's exes that are involved and holidays and wow. I mean, how in the world can we ever have peace with so many moving parts in our life? Or maybe you may be in a place where to this day, you haven't forgiven your mom, your dad, your brother or sister for something that happened years and years ago, and it's like a grudge that you just can't let go. I have good news for you today. I believe that Jesus wants to do a lot of healing and has the power to do a lot of healing in our hearts today. As we look at this very important beatitude that speaks right in the middle of it, and here's what Jesus says, Matthew chapter 5, verse 9. Here's what it says. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Now, why are they called children of God? Well, it's because we start to look like God, who is our Prince of Peace, like Jesus, who is our Prince of Peace. In fact, when God sent Jesus into the world, one of the primary reasons is to bring complete peace to our life, not to remove all the chaos from our life, but Jesus died on the cross and rose from the grave so that you could have peace in your relationship with God. That you could be at peace with God. But not only that, but that could filter into your earthly relationships. That you could have peace with one another. And also you could be at peace with who God has created you to be. So we start to look and things start to look like it did when God created everything back in Genesis chapter 1. That everything was good. Perfect relationship with God and with each other, and we were whole. Jesus, the point of what God wants to do in your life, he wants to take you to that place where basically you, again, just like in the Garden of Eden, have that perfect relationship with God, with one another, and you're whole. And God's not finished working on us in order to do that. But when Jesus uses this word peace, it's so much more than like a 70s thing, peace, man. You know, it's so much more than just the absence of trouble or the absence of conflict. Sometimes that's what we think, like, oh, You know, we go to work and we're like, please, God, let this not be a tension-filled work week. You know, remove my chaos, remove my tension. But when Jesus is talking about this, what he really means is he wants to take our conflict and restore that conflict to right order, to rightly order the conflict in our life. And so really in the Bible, there's two words that are given that we really see for peace. In the New Testament that's seen here, it's irene, and the Old Testament, it's a word that you might be more familiar with, shalom. It's something that people use as a greeting today, shalom. It's kind of a way, almost like, you're in Hawaii, kind of like saying aloha. It's kind of like hey and bye as well, but it's, you're basically wishing peace on somebody, shalom. But shalom is so much bigger than just removing chaos and removing conflict. What it really means, even more deeply, is it means to be complete, to be whole. And so to have peace, it means to be whole. It also means to seek the highest good in every situation, to seek the highest good for somebody in your relationship, to have peace. I'm seeking the highest good for you. And so when Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, this would have been something that people would have been so shocked to hear during Jesus' time, because they had never heard anything like this. Because everybody had grown up, it would have been so countercultural. Everybody had been taught, as we were saying about a baby, everybody had been taught from the moment they were born that here's the way you handle things. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. In other words, if somebody hits you, you rear back and you let them have it too, right? If somebody steals from you, you figure out a way to steal something from them too. And this is kind of the way we do our relationship. This is the way the economy of the world works in a lot of ways. If somebody hurts me, I'm going to get back at them. I'm going to do the same thing to them because that's what they deserve. And so many times we think to ourselves, well, after what they've done, I've got a right to be angry. I've got a right to be offended. I've got a right to be hurt after everything that they've done. But having a right doesn't mean that it's right to get even. In fact, so many times conflict arises because we put ourselves and our needs ahead of resolving the conflict. For instance, when you place yourself and your needs and your feelings first in a conflict, it usually means that you're putting peace last. Peace doesn't usually come by stepping ahead and being first. It usually comes by saying, let me seek the highest good in this situation, even if it means I lose something, even if it means I lose the argument. And so, in fact, the Apostle Paul said something similar in Romans chapter 12, verses 17 and 18. Then we'll skip to verse 21 in just a minute. But here's what the Apostle Paul said. Sounds very much like Jesus. He says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. And again, they're probably hearing this and saying, well, how is that going to work? I mean, I'm going to be a doormat. People are going to just step all over me. Maybe you've thought this before. He says, be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. Don't worry about being right. Do what's right. Verse 18. It says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. And let's just leave that up. As far as it depends on you. The reality is, in any kind of conflict, in any kind of relationship, you can't control how anybody else responds to conflict. You can't control that. But what you can control, as far as it depends on you, is how you respond, how you're going to handle things. You can't make your mom or your dad do this certain thing. You can't make your spouse act a certain way, but you can control you. And so, as far as it depends on you, do everything in your power to live at peace with people. Now, verse 21, here's what it says. It says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Now, this is a head scratcher. It's like, well, that doesn't work either. I mean, how in the world are we going to get anywhere? How in the world are we going to get anywhere in this conflict? How in the world is anything going to change? And the truth is, if somebody does evil to you and you do something evil back to them, what happens? It's cyclical. It keeps going and going and going, like the Energizer Bunny that plays like a broken record in a bad way. The conflict keeps going. Somebody has to be the bigger man and the bigger woman to be able to step up and say, you know what, I'm going to do good for you even though you don't deserve it, because the Lord Jesus did the same for me. So, in fact, the early Methodist, John Wesley, gave the early Methodist three general rules that sound very similar to Jesus, very similar to Paul, and I want to share these with you. The first general rule that John Wesley gave the early Methodists is this: do no harm. Do no harm. That sounds like that should be a bigger spiritual thing to be a rule. Do no harm. But the reality is, so many times we can avoid conflict if we focus on doing no harm. The second one sounds very similar to it, but it's different. It's this: do good. Okay, those sound very similar. But so many times you can do good and actually cause harm. So the first rule is do no harm. The second one is do good. The third one has more to do with our source, and that's this: stay in love with God. Attend to the ordinances of God is what he said, but basically stay in love with God. He's your source. Do no harm, do good, stay in love with God. And it kind of sounds, it's interesting, Jesus, when he says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will become children of God. Notice he doesn't say, blessed are the peacekeepers. There's a big difference in peacemakers and peacekeepers. Peacemakers, it basically means you're a maker and maintainer of peace. You help to produce peace. You're a source of peace in relationships around you. On the other hand, peacekeepers simply try to avoid conflict at all cost. It's the proverbial, sweep it under a rug and let's pretend it's not there and maybe someday it'll disappear, right? This is peacekeeping, and that doesn't work. In fact, so many times we go to family dinners and it's like, we all know what it is. We all know what the point of conflict is. Let's not talk about it and let's all be happy because we're fine and we're not going to talk about that issue. And, we're just going to pretend that everything is good. And there's tension behind the scenes, but everybody's happy, no fighting, And we do this in our family lives. And then sooner or later, months and months go by and something happens and it's like, It's like the volcano starts to erupt, because what happens is something happens and it sets you or sets somebody else off. And all of a sudden what you start hearing and maybe what you start saying is this: I'm so sick and tired of you doing this and this and this and this. It's like left, right, left jab, right jab. And you're like, what in the world? Where did that come from? I just said pass the gravy, what's up with this at our family dinner? But we're happy. Everybody's, this is the reality. Where did all this come from? And what it is it's this unresolved conflict, that's been buried or swept under the rug and buried under the surface. And sooner or later, it hits a tipping point and everything comes out like a volcano all at once. This is why it's not helpful to be a peacekeeper. See, that's why Jesus tells us to be a peacemaker, because peacemakers work through the conflict. They don't avoid the conflict. They don't step away from it and not go that way. They also don't arm wrestle everybody looking for a fight. There's a difference, right? But peacemakers work through the conflict to make and maintain the peace. They work on the issues and work through them, relying on Jesus to be their Prince of Peace. In boxing, professional boxing, I've heard that boxers are very well trained to inflict the maximum amount of damage with the swing of their fist. They know how to do it like none of us do. In fact, I've heard that boxers actually have to register their hands or even register themselves as a deadly weapon. Now, that'd be pretty cool if you go to Disney World and, it's like there's a long line. It's like, hey, you might want to step aside. I'm a deadly weapon, That'd be pretty awesome, right? It could be useful. But the reality is boxers, if they hit somebody on the street, it's not fair at all, because it's like they're trained in ways that we're not. And so even in the ring of boxing, they have to have rules in order to maintain kind of these fair fight rules in order to have a fair fight. Because otherwise they'd kill each other, So they have to tell them, back away, okay, ready, break, all the rules in boxing. Everybody in all of our relationships need fair fight rules. All of us need to know the rules of fighting fair. That is, unless some of your family fights, they look something like this clip from Napoleon Dynamite. Check it out. Unless you fight like that, well, maybe they actually did need some rules, because he kind of got cheap-shotted at the end. But all of us need rules for fighting fair, so we don't get cheap-shotted, so we don't cheap-shot other people and hurt them relationally in our lives. And so what I want to give you is four rules for fighting fair, four fight fair rules that really peacemakers do. And here's the first one. The first fight fair rule that peacemakers do is this: when conflict comes, believe the best, don't assume the worst. Believe the best, don't assume the worst. Man, I can't tell you how many times, my wife is like the angel of this. She is awesome at this. She believes the best in me instead of assuming the worst. And I've got story after story after story of that. Thanks be to God. Because here's a, kind of another way to say believe the best, don't assume the worst. Another way to say it is show people the same grace that the Lord Jesus has shown you. Show people grace. And assuming the worst in somebody simply says, well, oh, I knew you were going to do that. You always do that. I mean, I knew if I told you this, you were going to forget it. I knew that. That's assuming the worst, right? You always, that's not a good thing to say, using the word always and never, you know? But believing the best says, look, I know you didn't mean to hurt me. I know you didn't mean to forget that. I know you've been busy. And it doesn't excuse it, but it's like, I know you had a tough day, but it basically is believing the best. Like, I know you care about me. I know you didn't mean to forget that, and you move on. See, sometimes conflict is simply a result of mishandled stress. Sometimes it has nothing to do with the conflict that's actually happening. Sometimes there's a conflict happening inside the person that comes out on you. Remember the volcano, right? For instance, sometimes mishandled stress. Maybe there's stress at work that's going on. And there's stress, and maybe there's something that's happening and worried about getting laid off, or how's this project going to go, or the people that you're working with are crazy, all sorts of things. Maybe there's stress over money. Maybe there's stress over maybe just the result of being tired. And sometimes, like a volcano, we get around the people that we know best and the people that we love most, and it spews out on them. And you didn't mean to hurt them. And they didn't mean to hurt you. It's just a result of being tired and being stressed. And it doesn't excuse it. It doesn't make it better, but we believe the best instead of assuming the worst. And so this is kind of how Jesus wants us to live. You know, it's also something where sometimes conflict is a result, simply a misunderstanding or miscommunication. We talk a lot in premarital counseling about love languages. And it's so funny how often we can be trying to say something, communicate to each other, but we end up doing this. We miss each other. For instance, hey, you know, you say you love me, but you don't take out the trash very much. You always forget to do this. Yeah, I mean, I tell you all the time that I love you. I don't know what the problem, you know. And so you end up, you're trying to say I love you in different ways, but you're missing each other. Sometimes it's just miscommunication. And so believing the best means that you show grace for what's communicated, and even when people don't listen very clearly. Obviously, we should get better at that, but believe the best. Don't assume the worst. Here's the second fair fight rule when it comes to conflict. Speak the truth in love. Speak the truth in love. Now, this sounds very much like Ephesians chapter 4, 15, when the Apostle Paul actually said that. He says this, instead, we will speak the truth in love, growing in every way more and more like Christ. And see, I want you to notice, so oftentimes we choose to yell the truth with volume. We choose to tell the truth or knock the person down with the truth. It's almost like, you know, that great movie. If you want the truth, you can't handle the truth. But we're ready to give people the truth sometimes. We're ready to smack them down with some truth when they've hurt us, right? You've done this to me. But the reality is, what Jesus wants us to do is to speak the truth in love. Here's kind of a way to do that. One of the ways you do that is you tell the truth during non-conflict times. Tell the truth during non-conflict times. For instance, remember the eruption, the volcano and everything. When somebody throws a shoe at you because they're angry, it's not the time to bring up another issue. And I hope that doesn't happen, you know, or anything like that. But, you know, it's not the time to bring up another issue. It's like, oh, yeah, we're started on this. Well, I want to tell you about this issue, too. That's not the time. What usually happens, it's just a cyclical thing that the argument continues and the tension continues. In other words, one of the things that you can do is you find a time when it's a good time, a time of peace. You're like, why would I do that? Peaceful times, why do I want to create chaos? What that ends up doing, when you're able to talk to somebody when everybody's calm, you end up being able to say something to them to build them up in a way that's not attacking them. And so here's what you can do. You can maybe say this, hey, remember in refresh group the other night? Well, maybe that's a bad example because y'all will be like, I don't want to go to refresh group if that's what happens there. But anyway, you know, I just noticed like, when I'm talking, you kind of interrupt me, and you may not realize you're doing that, but, you know, it really makes me feel like I'm not valued, and it's like, I didn't realize that that was happening. You see the difference if you handle that in a time when yelling and screaming or there's tension, and you're, oh, yeah, let's bring out another thing. It never goes well. So handle conflict. Speak the truth in love during non-conflict times. The second way to speak the truth in love, we already talked about it real briefly, is this. Attack the problem, not the person. Attack the problem, not the person. That sounds real elementary school, I know. But here's the thing. We do a lot of coaching stuff and just pastoral coaching and stuff like that. And one of the things we talk about is we have a big evaluation culture here at the Fountain. You may not know that. We evaluate everything. But sometimes evaluation, people hate evaluation oftentimes because usually when you get evaluated in your career or in your family, it's almost like a hammer, you know? It's like, man, I don't want to hear how things are going because, you know, it feels like you're getting beat down. But one of the things we talk about is how can we speak the truth in love in a way that helps people to climb a ladder? There's a difference in using, in speaking the truth in love like a hammer and doing it like a ladder that helps people to get better. That's the way we do things around here. And what ends up happening is you're able to speak the truth in love, attack the problem, not the person. And it ends up being something that makes them better. For instance, you know, I noticed that there's a couple times that you're just not really listening to me. You don't do that. Notice there's times when you don't listen to me. And when I feel like you're not listening, I feel like you don't really value me. Or maybe, you know, I know you just lied about that little thing, but when even something that insignificant, when you kind of stretch the truth, you say this to your kids, it makes me feel like I can't trust you for even bigger things. Or maybe when you check your phone, when we're sitting at the table, like I know you're busy, but like I feel like we're not important to you. That's a moment of truth for me. Like, you know, I love it how the cook needs to eat what he's cooking, you know? And this is something for me that messages always speak to me. And this is me being really honest about where I am and where God needs to work on me. So speak the truth in love. Here's the third fair fight rule. And in order to be a peacemaker, and here's what it is. Apologize when you're wrong. Apologize when you're wrong. Well, I'm never wrong, so I guess I'm good, right? That's how some of us are. Some of us look at the pie, and we're used to like, okay, the whole pie, like they own the pie. But even if you own even a sliver, and even if you're just a little bit of the reason for the conflict, it means being willing to apologize when you're wrong, owning your own part. And in fact, James chapter 5, verse 16, Jesus' brother James, he says this, therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other, so that you may be healed. See, it's really hard to hold a grudge when you're holding somebody up in prayer. It's hard to do both. See, how do you think your relationships would be different if you started to own your part of the conflict, if you admitted your sins and you started praying together? It would change a lot. See, peacemakers apologize when they're wrong. And here's kind of how you do it. One of the ways you do it is you admit to specific actions without excuses. Admit to specific actions without excuses. For instance, excuses only point the blame away from yourself and oftentimes to other people. For instance, here's a bad example. This is like creating excuses. Well, I'm sorry I called you that name, but I wouldn't have had to say that if you'd be more appreciative, right? It's like, wow, that was an apology. You know, that didn't work out really well. Or look, I'm sorry I left this toilet seat up. I mean, you should have been smart enough to not fall in. No, just saying that just to make sure you're paying attention. Here's a good example. I'm sorry that I belittled you in front of your friends. Will you please forgive me? That's kind of what it looks like. You apologize. No excuses, then ask for forgiveness. And so, anyway, let's move on to the next one. The fourth one is this. Fair fight rule that peacemakers do is this. Forgive and let go. Let it go, let it go. It's like, you know, that's a big song. But it's so hard to let it go, isn't it? It's so hard to forgive somebody when they've hurt us and to really let things go. It's easy to sing about it. Everybody does in America, but it's hard to let things go. Because I'm not naive that there, for some of you, you have gone through some things in your family. Maybe they have done some things to you that maybe it caused so much pain that it's so incredibly hard to forgive. And maybe you're at a point where you just don't want to forgive. You don't even care. You don't even care to forgive them. Maybe even be in relationship with them any longer. And the reality is, you may be saying, well, look, how do I even forgive when I've been hurt that much in my life? And I'm not going to say it's easy, but I will tell you it's doable with the help of God. He's your Prince of Peace. He wants to help you. In fact, it's so important also to have a Christ-centered home, to have a home that's filled with peace. In fact, the Bible gives us some tools on how to do it. Here's what it says, Colossians chapter 3, verse 13. And it says this. It says, bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. How do we do it? Well, you forgive as the Lord has forgiven you. Now, that just kind of seems funny, but you think about how many times has the Lord forgiven you when you have sinned in some kind of way? For me, a ton. God has forgiven me over and over and over. And how many times has God forgiven you when you didn't deserve it at all? When you couldn't even pay it back? Jesus has forgiven us over and over and over. And so we forgive as the Lord has forgiven us. Not because that person deserves it, but because they're worth it. It's worth it. In fact, when we forgive, when we choose to let it go, we look more and more like Jesus. I want you to know your family's worth it. Your family's worth it. No grudge, no hurt is more important than a right relationship with your family. And so as followers of Jesus, we don't cut family out. As followers of Jesus, we don't walk away when things get hard. We don't write off our kids or our spouse or our parents. What we do is we forgive. And when we forgive, we start to look like our Heavenly Father. And in fact, here's what it says: blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God.